Got case number 76641, TRP Fund 4 LLC versus U.S. Bank National Association et al. Okay, I see Mr. Wright coming up on behalf of the appellants. And for the respondents, we have, we have Ms. Miller and Mr. Is it Reeder or Ryder? Reeder. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, and Mr. Wright, did you want to reserve any time in rebuttal?
5 minutes, please.
Okay, you may do so. Okay. And if you want to identify your co-counsel,
I have a question, please. Chris Phillips is my associate.
Okay, Mr. Phillips, good to see you here, too. Mr. Wright, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is John Wright. I represent the appellant, TRP Fund 4, in this case. This case really essentially boils down to a single issue, in my mind, at least, which is that the district court failed to apply the proper standard when evaluating the bank's defense, which is essentially that there was commercial unreasonableness. In this case, factually, what happened is there was a notice of sale that had claimed about $12,000 in deficiency. About $800 of that should not have been included in there. They were non-chargeable items. Mm-hmm. So the actual amount of the notice of sale is someplace in the $11,000 range. This is the only technical issue with respect to the sale that was brought to the attention of the district court. What the district court found and what the bank argued was that that constituted fraud, and therefore the purchaser took the title subject to the deed of trust.
You made an argument in your closing to Judge Bell, and I kind of want to ask you factually regarding that, about the fact that there was no chilled bidding here, that the HOA didn't make a bid, that there was like two other, I believe it was another person or another entity and your client. Can you expand on that unlike some of these other cases, that the bidding wasn't chilled by the fact that this $800 was put into this
correct sale? Yeah, exactly. Because the final bid was $15,100. There are multiple bidders, multiple bids passed back and forth. I fail to see how having a greater opening bid could possibly lead to a lesser sales price, because that is what they would have to prove. The argument they're making is that this constitutes fraud and we have a low sales price. They take the approach, basically the UCC approach, which was rejected by this court, and saying, look, it's kind of like a recipe. I can have some fraud over here, and if I got a low price, you put it together, the sale doesn't work, without getting into causation. And this court has repeatedly said, starting from Golden versus Tomiyasu, probably before that actually, but more distinctly in Golden versus Tomiyasu, and then later on in Shadow Canyon, that no, that's not the way it works. You got to have some fraud, unfairness, or oppression, which brings about the low price. And that was completely lost in the district court. And even today, the appellant's answering brief does not pinpoint how that could possibly happen. They completely avoid the issue of causation, and nor does it speak to any sort of prejudice that could possibly occur from an opening bid being greater than what it should be, particularly when somebody bids above it. Once somebody bids above the opening bid becomes irrelevant.
Did the district court make any findings on her analysis on the fraud here? I mean, we're kind of looking for that. Maybe you could help us out.
It kind of flips back and forth a little bit. If you look at it, I have the order. It's at appendix. The page I'm looking at is on page 7 of the order, which is appendix 1563. It's in volume 10. And if you look at that, right before conclusions of law begin, it says all of this evidence, which was simply that there were these improper items inside the notice, points to a fraudulent or unfair business practice on the part of AMS, which was the collection agent, and clear evidence that they did not meet the duty of good faith. So that's a lot of stuff going on there. That's several different standards at once. Then you swing down to the conclusions of law, number 2, mid-paragraph, And it says AMS included items in the lien that were, that they knew or should have known were uncollectible, thus artificially inflating the amount of the lien. Well, that's not even a fraud standard, knew or should have known. That's like a negligence standard. So, no, there's nothing telling us how they get to the conclusion that this caused the lower price. And in fact, it's pretty clear from the order that that was not within the court's understanding at the time. The word Shadow Canyon appear in the order, but the analysis in Shadow Canyon fails to appear in the order completely.
Well, I think one of the reasons we're concerned about, usually in bench trials, of course, we have to give deference to the court on the factual findings. Sure. Legal findings are de novo here, so we got two different issues here in getting this done. But the court did have some trouble following this reasoning of the district court. That's one reason we wanted to argue the case and give you both sides a chance to clarify that for us as well. So what relief are you seeking, Mr. Wright, at this stage here? And I'll ask opposing counsel. Obviously, they want to affirm, but get their position on it. Then.
I just want a declaration that the purchaser bought the property free and clear of the deed of trust.
Okay, but I mean, as far as our legal analysis, you're saying that the court abused its discretion in its factual findings or its legal conclusions what?
It did both, and I'll start with the factual aspect of it because there's a finding, there's a blanket statement of fraud, and it kind of goes back and forth and says some unfairness and possibly bad faith. I don't know, but to meet the criteria of fraud, there's five elements, and clearly the record shows that four of those don't exist. Yes, there was a mistake in the amount, but there's no evidence that they understood that it was wrong. There's no evidence that the bank relied on it, or anybody relied on it for that matter. In fact, the servicer at the time was Bank of America, and the attorney for Bank of America, Rock Ewing, took the stand and stated, yeah, they had the ledger because they requested the ledger so they could figure out what the monthly assessment fee was. But they didn't rely on the ledger. He specifically said we did not rely on the ledger because we make our own calculation of what we think is permissible in terms of the annual assessment and also collection costs. So they didn't rely on it. Without reliance, you're not going to have fraud. But more importantly, which is the common denominator in all these analyses, is that there's no damage. What is the damage by having those items in the notice of sale? In fact, in Shadow Canyon, the notice of sale was also incorrect. The amount was incorrect. In Shadow Canyon, the notice had the amount of deficiency at the time the notice was issued versus calculating it prospectively for the time of the sale. And this court determined that that does not meet the threshold issue of fraud, unfairness, or oppression. So you never even got to the second element of whether or not in some way affected the sales price.
It looks like Judge Bell was really hung up on the management companies, I guess, inflating that lien.
Correct.
And that was what she, I guess, had stated in her ruling, that this somehow was the unfairness or the fraud.
But if even being that the case, if you assume that to be true, how does it affect the sales price? I mean, it's like a, you know, it's a tree falling in the woods. Nobody's there to hear it. Nobody relied on it. The only time that this is figured out is during discovery years later. This sale happened in 2014. How does this affect the sales price? It can't. It's impossible.
What do you say to their supplemental points and authorities? They submitted to the court supplemental points and authorities regarding resources that just came down in July, I think, and which was a bench trial. That had to do with some, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I'm trying to recall what the argument is with respect to his
I don't know.
The
they're just attached
is.
To, I guess I'll ask them.
Yeah,
I just wanted to know what your thoughts were of their supplemental, just out of fairness, because they just filed it January 17th.
Yeah. I did read it, and I don't find any applicability to the issue because we're still back to Shadow Canyon, okay, which is, there has to be causation between this and a low sales price. And they complain about a low sales price, but again, how does that occur when the initial opening bid was actually greater? Now, if it had been lesser, you might have some sort of argument. Let's suppose that realize the bank's argument about the sales price is that there's not enough money to pay them off. That's the complaint. So if, for instance, and none of these sales are going to have money going to the bank, as we all know, at least, you know, pre-2015 amendments, pre-SFR, which this case was. So if nobody bid whatsoever because this inflated opening bid, it would revert back to the HOA. Okay. How does that affect anybody? How does that price, how does that opening bid affect anybody? I guess they could say, well, the opening bid, it shielded the subsequent bidders, but if they weren't willing to pay what the opening bid amount was, then I guess you're saying then that they would be willing to pay the $11,000, the correct bid amount, but they weren't willing to pay the $12,000, incorrect amount. The $11,000 is not going to get them to where they want. The $11,000 is only going to pay the lien. Not one penny is going to go to the bank. So we'd be back to the exact same complaint and the exact same harm, which is none. And that's essentially the problem in this case. Even if you were to go from a substantial compliance sort of perspective, this would still comply because this is form and content. This isn't date and time and location. And again, second element is prejudice. How are they prejudiced by the alleged defect? You know, there's nothing in the record to suggest how the court found there to be prejudice. I don't think the court found prejudice. This is not something that we sprung up for the first time on appeal. You know, in the trial court level, we were arguing Shadow Canyon, and the court was fully aware of the Shadow Canyon standard. But it uses Shadow Canyon, but it doesn't use the analysis. So, again, I guess I'm still waiting from the other side, and so I can react.
Somebody tell me, reserve the balance.
I'll reserve the balance of my time.
Yeah. You will react.
Yes, thank you.
Hear their argument then. Okay, thank you very much. And you have about almost 4 minutes. Ms. Miller, if you wish to proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Christina Miller, and along with Robert Reether at council table, we represent Respondent U.S. Bank. This case, as I'm sure you've come to recognize from reading the trial transcript, presents a disturbing set of facts. During the two-day bench trial before Judge Bell, she was presented with substantial documentary evidence and witness testimony. She heard testimony from the foreclosing HOA trustee, their witness, admitting that they intentionally added amounts into the balance of the lien that they had no ability to do per the law, no ability under the statute, for amounts that they had already included for the work done by their third-party vendor, Priority Posting Publishing, as well as amounts for work that they themselves admit they didn't do and would never have done.
Well, let me ask you this, because having been in the district court with these thousands of cases that I also dealt with, that's pretty much every case, okay, it's every case. What chilled the bidding here? What they're saying is that Judge Bell, in her order, cites to Shadow Canyon, says that there's fraud, oppression, and irregularities. And the irregularity that you're pointing to is the management company tacked on more fees, which is, by the way, in every case. Okay, and they're giving you that. They're saying, yep, it's true. How did that chill the bidding here? Because there's a bench trial that shows that there's oppression, fraud, or whatever that other word is. I'm at a loss for oppression, fraud, or
unfairness,
irregularities, whatever. Mm-hmm. That favors your winning at a bench trial, because she cites to Shadow Canyon. What chilled the bidding here? You've got multiple bidders.
Well, I think the first thing we need to look at is chilled bidding is not as extreme as TRP says. It doesn't mean that if somebody bids $1 over your opening bid amount, that bidding is therefore not chilled. We know that the amount of the lien stated in the recorded notice of sale was greater than it should have been. When you artificially inflate a lien amount, and then you place that lien amount on record to the world, not only the homeowner, all the lien holders, any potential bidder, you are discouraging bidders showing up because they think we have to pay more we have to pay this high amount.
You know, you cite to resources and to the other one that you cited too, where nobody shows up, it's sold for $100. I mean, that's not this case. So that's a whole different, the HOA didn't show up in the case that you sent, and it's the second case, I think.
The Lars Family Trust case?
Yeah, because the Lessing and Koning is in the resource case, which has to do with notice. There's no problem with notice here, right?
That's correct. We're not arguing that
right.
There's a notice.
So you attach a case that deals with an opinion regarding notice. That doesn't really apply to this case. So I was at a loss of why you filed that, but maybe you'll, enlighten me to that. And then secondly, the second case that you attach talks about where they start bidding at like $99 or $100 on a $400,000 property, which I think the court a panel case said, like, ta-da, it's automatic fraud almost. So, I mean, the facts are really different than what you've supplemented us with.
They are, and Your Honor, we did not supplement with Resources Group in the Lars Family Trust case for the purpose of chilled bidding. If I can sort of take a step back, and I think this court is, and counsel for TRP is looking for that explanation as to Resources Group, and I'd like to start first with Resources Group. This court took the opportunity to gather together its decisions, Golden versus Tomiyasu, Shadowwood, Shadow Canyon, and pull them together and say, here's what we're actually intending to say under these cases. And not once in Resources Group does this court use the word brings about. That third prong standard that TRP insists the district court must have considered, otherwise her entire opinion should be overturned, is simply not a consideration by this court in its most recent published opinion on this. And in fact, in Resources...
Don't you think Shadowwood, and I think I was a district court judge in that case. I mean, it was summary judgment. This is a bench trial. But don't you think that that is exactly what Shadowwood says, that it has to bring about? The irregularities must bring about the low sales price.
So this court may have intended that in Shadow Canyon, which at this point was 3 years ago. But in our most recent published authority, this court has departed from continuing to use that language. And I think that we need to pay attention to that, because if it was intended to be a three-prong approach to this hydraulic relationship that we're looking at when we weigh the equities of a commercially unreasonable sale, a voidable sale, well, then this court would have noted that when summarizing these opinions. But they didn't. The three panel of justices in Resources Group clarified under these cases that where the relationship is hydraulic, we're doing a weighing test, and I quote, and this is them citing to Shadow Canyon, the only part of Shadow Canyon that they cite to says, where the inadequacy is palpable and great, very slight additional evidence of unfairness or irregularity is sufficient to authorize the granting of the relief sought. And that's exactly what Judge Bell did here. She took the undisputed sale price compared with the stipulated fair market value of the property at the trial, which amounted to 11.6%, so a grossly inadequate sales price. She took that evidence, combined it with the testimony she heard from the HOA trustee's witness, admitting we just added on additional amounts because we thought we could get it all the way up to $1,950. They admit they never did the work. They didn't know where the authority came from. It was simply an auto-populated entry from their computer system. So they were profiting off of completely undeserved work that they never actually did. And this is disturbing, again, just as Judge Bell said, because you have a homeowner losing their home and in exchange a foreclosure trustee getting an undeserved profit off of it. And again, so we might not have an extreme level of chilled bidding, but under this hydraulic relationship where we have an 11.6% sales price, a grossly inadequate sales price, Judge Bell found very slight evidence of fraud or unfairness. And even if we take fraud...
So you're saying as a matter of law that inadequate sales or inadequate price plus management fees being inflated basically equals fraud or as a matter of law. That's what you're saying here. Pretty much.
I think that is the correct conclusion. And I'd like to make a couple distinctions because, again, some of the other cases that we've cited to and that TRP cited to, they are factually distinguishable. So in the Envy Eagles case that TRP cites to for the proposition that, oh, adding in additional amounts really doesn't arise to that level of fraud or unfairness, well, in that case, the challenge was whether the foreclosure notices statement that the lien also included collection fees, excuse me, collection costs and attorney's fees, whether that invalidated it. But nowhere in the Envy Eagles opinion did anybody challenge that those amounts had actually been incurred. Somebody had done the work, they just weren't permitted to recover for it. And the same thing in Shadow Canyon. This court considered a challenge to the lien amount because the lien included fines. And we all know at this point that the HOAs cannot proceed to foreclose on a lien amount that includes fines. It's simply assessments and then any nuisance and abatement charges. So again, nobody in Shadow Canyon challenged that those fines hadn't actually been incurred by the homeowner. But here, we have a completely different situation. We have an HOA trustee just adding in amounts, and they can't provide any justification for it. When they were challenged at trial to provide some basis for that, they couldn't provide any. And they even admit, and this is really important, they admit that they just added amounts on. They were not the foreclosure agent that actually conducted the sale. That was their third-party vendor. The third-party vendor charged a fee for that. Well, AMS came in and separately charged a fee for them doing it, even though they admit in the record they didn't. They also added on a $30 fee, which $30, I think we all recognize, is not a huge amount of money, but it's the principle. They were fraudulently adding on amounts to intentionally inflate the amount of the lien so that when the property went to foreclosure, they got paid the maximum amount of money that they believed that they were entitled to be paid.
What do you say about his statement that this is only $800? I shouldn't say only because $800 is still $800, but he's saying $800. Would you concede that we're talking $800 an inflated amount here, or is it more than that?
I believe it's actually more than that, Your Honors. If we look at Judge Bell's order after trial in the record at Volume 10, page AA 1562 to 1563, she does identify every single one of the charges that was impermissible. And I think if we calculate it all together, we're actually looking at an amount closer to $1,200. So it's not an amount that can be ignored. We have evidence that the homeowner never tried to enter a payment plan. That's in AMS's account ledger.
But aren't we, I just want to back up a second. We're a step removed from a homeowner in this case, correct? Someone else bought the property and TRP bought the property from another speculator.
Correct.
Right? So we're not on the homeowner piece. But it would seem, I don't read Resources Group quite, I think, the same as such an expansive statement as you're making it, because it would seem to me there still has to be some nexus between the low price and any fraud or oppression. We started with commercial unreasonableness. That is not in and of itself going to be a problem, because we know that when you go to a homeowners association sale, as we all know from all of our offices full of papers, that you're buying a lawsuit. So, yeah, they come cheap because you're buying a lawsuit. So we say, hey, we can't just do commercial unreasonableness. So we added in the fraud, oppression, and unfairness, and recognizing there's a synergy there. If you're selling the house for 50 cents, then if there's fraud or oppression or unfairness, it that may have influenced it. Here, it would seem that the alleged fraud tacking in these things actually inflated the price that the house got sold for. Because what is the material difference if they had not done this and this house went on the market using your figures for $10,900? It sold for $15,100. So how did those that extra $1,200 somehow keep that $15,000 from being more? And what evidence in the record supports it?
So, Your Honors, I would point you to the opinion in 1209 Village Walk Trust that was in our answering brief. In that case, this court considered what chill bidding actually means. And you cited to a couple, one's a secondary authority, the other is a Florida appellate court opinion.
But didn't and 1201, I mean, the record in 1201 was a lot of potential other irregularities. And wasn't that a summary judgment? Because that's, I believe it was. And so, basically, there was enough in, as far as summary judgment to go back and just look at all the weird irregularities that occurred there. And then we list off all those irregularities. We don't see, besides the management company, we're not seeing any other irregularities. So how is 1209 similar to this?
It's. I'm not using this case, Your Honor, to say it's factually identical or on point. We're using this case because this court sets a certain standard for what chilled bidding means. And really importantly, when we're talking about a commercially reasonable or unreasonable sale and whether it should be voidable, I'll point this court to the Florida District Appellate Court opinion, Palacios, on page 2 of the 1209 Village Walk case, where this court cites to it, and I quote, to conduct a fair foreclosure sale, the correct amount needed to pay off the foreclosing lien must be known to all potential bidders. This is so each bidder can assess the corresponding, can assess the situation and decide what it's willing to bid. And that's exactly what we have here. If we had...
I'm sorry, is that Palacios you said? Right?
Palacios, yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
So if we had the true amount of the lien in place, and that was placed in the record through the notice of sale, and that true lien amount was the opening bid, well, there may have been other people, other bidders, showing up at the sale, and competitive bidding would have driven the ultimate sales price up. But we can see that the difference between the opening bid, which, Your Honors, may
have
been
my... You may proceed. Thank you. Go ahead.
I think this requires a correction to the record because TRP says in their reply brief the opening bid amount was the amount listed in the notice of sale of $12,101. Well, the documentary record actually shows it was $13,391. The resulting successful bid was marginal above that. So we can see while there may have been one other bidder, it did not amount to competitive bidding. There was no driving up of the sale price such that we would have had an adequate sale price.
Can you ask a question, Chief?
Of course.
But what evidence is in the record that bidders didn't come because it was listed at 12-something instead of 10-something?
There is, we don't have that evidence. I can't point to it, but TRP cannot point to evidence in the record saying, but there was competitive bidding in the alternative. We can look at the face of the trustee's deed, the recorded deed. We can see what the opening bid amount was, the resulting bid amount, and this court can infer, again, because the standard is very slight evidence, that that resulting bid amount may have been the result of some chilled, some non-competitive bidding at the end of the day. Thank you,
okay. Well, thank you very much. Mr. Wright, you have a little under 4 minutes here.
Well, first off, with respect to the supplemental points and authorities, I don't see that as a as this court reversing itself in shadow canon. I think the court would certainly have said that if that were the case, changing the standard. You read shadow canon. I remember when I read it the first time, I got the impression the court was pretty exhausted by explaining this over and over again, that no, there has to be a nexus because that line of case has gone back for decades. And certainly there's nothing that's come out since then that said, no, we've changed our mind about that. It's just not the case. With respect to the evidence in the record, there is no evidence in the record that there were bidders who didn't show up for this because of the notice of sale amount. I mean, they could have done that. They could have tried to find some people, but they didn't. So to say, come in here and speculate that maybe somebody might have thought that this was not enough, that's not going to happen. And remember, again, the amount in the notice of sale being at $12,000 if you're not going to show up and pay $12,000, you're certainly not going to show up and pay $15,100, and you're certainly not going to show up and pay what they want, which is the full fair market value in a traditional sale of a couple hundred thousand
dollars. It's not an unreasonable position, right? They loaned $225,000 on this house.
Right.
And it's going bye-bye.
Sure.
So it's not unreasonable that they're coming in, you know. We've already, by case law, making them pay someone else's debts, because that's what we do when we have them pay an HOA fee that a homeowner incurred and didn't pay.
Well, I mean, not unreasonable to be upset about the fact that they lost their security interest in this home.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. But that outrage should have passed, you know, in the SFR case.
SFR.
Yeah, that's SFR. Right, that's the SFR case. And I get it. And some people agree with it, some people didn't.
SFR, I think it was $800,000 or something.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. But, you know, even in the SFR.
Since SFR, yeah. I mean, certainly.
Right.
That's ship has sailed.
The ship has sailed. And even in SFR, nobody disagreed about priority. People just disagreed. The dissent was only about whether or not it required a judicial action versus a non-judicial action. Everybody agreed, 100%, that the HOA lien had priority. And so, you know, the outrage is misplaced. The outrage should be on the people who didn't go ahead and protect their security interest. But to say that somebody didn't show up and that person would have been the ultimate bidder, well, if they're not going to show up to pay $11,000 for the opening bid, they're not going to pay something greater than that. They're certainly not going to pay a couple hundred thousand dollars.
So, Mr. Wright, to summarize, I believe your position is that Judge Bell committed an error of law in her legal analysis as the standard on Shadowwood and the other cases there, in that the irregularity wasn't sufficient, combined with the sales price, to justify setting aside the foreclosure.
That's absolutely correct. I think you could go further if you needed to, but you don't really need to get any further than that. I mean, there's certainly problems with the determination of fraud. There's a lack of evidence for that. The standard hasn't been met even for that. But absolutely, if you're not going to require a nexus between the whatever the irregularity happens to be and the sales price, you fail. End of story.
Okay. This was a bench trial, so it's already gone to trial. It's not a summary judgment where most of these cases are when we get them. So I assume your position is it's not necessary to remand if we agreed with your argument.
Correct.
And if we don't, we'll affirm the case pursuant to the argument made by U.S. Bank.
Absolutely correct.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank
you. Just want to make sure we got to understand what each party wants, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you,
Beth. Excellent arguments and briefs. Certainly worth the argument. We appreciate you all coming down here, and we will take the case under submission, and we'll be in recess until 2:30 for our next case.